Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 568, Science Faction Death by Meat Air.
Death by Meat is one of my favorite comedic pornographic horror series of all time.
A lot of adjectives to describe that.
It's a very niche genre, if we're being honest, Bobby. It's only for true film connoisseurs like myself. But you're saying air, but this toxic meat air, and I doubt we're talking about a very niche genre of films, air, killing people. So I'm interested to see what that's about.
Yes, it will be very exciting. By the way, welcome to all of you listeners who are tuning in after hearing me on Cult Podcast with Paige Wesley and Armando Torres. We saw, based on our numbers, that a whole bunch of people tuned into us last week. I actually even got contacted by a bunch of you who were asking questions about human paleontology since last week's episode focused on that, as well as the show and science in general. Feel free to send those in. Those are fantastic. We love cult listeners. We love to bring you into the fold. And if you have any questions you want to ask about science, about the show, about us, feel free to send that on. We try and respond in a timely manner, but great having all the cult attendees join into the Science Faction boat.
I wanted to call you a liar about you getting questions about human archaeology, the most boring of all sciences, but you keep forcing me as an admin onto the Science Faction website, so I actually saw the inbox, and so I know you're not lying. We actually do have a cult podcast bump.
And speaking of the biggest cult podcast fan, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy, and with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Over the last year, we had Paige and Armando on our Dungeons & Dragons podcast, our live play Dungeons & Dragons podcast, Awful Neutral. And I don't know if you got the same treatment, but we got the cult podcast bump going. We're talking about cocaine.
Yeah, I was going to say, you and Armando just did shit tons of rails of cocaine.
Yeah, the thing is, since we were doing it remotely, we didn't, you know, we didn't share. I don't even think we knew each other were doing it. We just basically have two people with drug problems who were recording a podcast at the same time.
And, like, that's kind of hard, because normally, if you see, like, what we call a drug off, where two degenerates are trying to do more, like, each one trying to up the other in terms of who can do more drugs, you kind of know who's going to win, except Armando's got size on you. He's like 6'5", so he's got the size on you, but you've got the nose size on him. And so when it comes to actual cocaine uses, it's hard to tell which horse is going to take that race.
Yeah, listen, I got, first off, I thought you were going to say, but you have heart, but, you know, you went towards nose. That's cool, too.
What am I, Captain Planet?
First off, that's only one aspect of Captain Planet. Captain Planet has four of the fucking elements that comprise him.
Asian monkey boy.
He was South American.
Swamp Thing.
And Swamp Thing.
Spandex.
And I don't
crew
know.
Cuts.
Hulk Hogan, I think, was one of them.
And for those of you cult podcast listeners or other new listeners by any means, we also have a weekly Patreon show, which we put out called I Call BS, where Damian tries to figure out which four of the recent published articles that I state in the show are true and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. He has a 100% fail rate, which is impressive for something that is done once a week for 8 years, and yet he has managed to do it, even in COVID when we no longer had a scientist for him to play against, which shocked me to the point where I couldn't believe he was continuing to fail even when he didn't have an opponent. It's like playing tennis against nobody and losing every time. He just continued to lose, which was incredibly impressive to me, but it's also actually very educating, and we do at least four science news stories for that week. So if you like this show and you want to get another four articles along with listening to Damian keep sisyphusingly pushing the rock up that hill and letting it roll down... Yep, go ahead and check out our Patreon. Look at Robert Timothy on Patreon. You'll find us out there.
You piece of shit, because all of these people, especially if they listen to the episode you were on, the part one, you sold I Call BS. First off, you didn't tell fans that it's now a Patreon-only exclusive, but don't worry, fans, you can actually go back into our library long. If you go back far enough, you can hear the bit. Secondly, you sold it as a straight bit. You were a carny up there. Selling a fake game to the fans as a legit game. You sold it straight. What our longtime fans know is that I Call BS is a Saw-like contraption, a Saw-like trivia contraption with a science veneer that Bobby has designed and trapped me in. And if I ever want to see my family again, I have to win this game that's unwinnable.
How else would I sell a perfectly legitimate game that has been played easily by everybody except you? Paige didn't have a problem with it. None of the scientists have a problem with it. You are the only one who seems to not be able to figure out the very simple rules and win the game. So I don't know how else I was supposed to quote unquote sell the show.
Podcast is an audio medium, but I'm looking at Bobby through the webcam right now, and he is shuffling a deck of cards. He has a Q-tip in his mouth. He has an eye patch on. He has several facial scars. He has a tooth that just shines and the light hits it right.
I have been described as the gambit of podcasting.
You are Cajun. That explains your sweet, authentic Cajun accent, which you've been using this whole episode.
All right, mon ami, let's get right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, death by meat air.
Is this like you die, you know, like a death by chocolate, like you're dying of so much savory goodness?
Yeah, it happens a lot in those Brazilian steakhouses.
Yeah, I go to Fogo de Chão. Fogo de Chão has a body count, every branch.
You know what? Actually, that is probably true in a way. But anyway, let's jump right into this. So, warning, if you eat meat, this article will probably make you feel guilty. And full disclosure, I eat a ton of meat. So this isn't some vegan trying to convince you to be a vegan. This is a fellow omnivore who's stating, hey, just so we all know what's up here, this is kind of what we're doing. And listen, I get it. I've done things before where I tried to cut down on the amount of red meat I eat or see where it comes from. So I'm not getting the stuff that is like cutting down the Amazon rainforest to create a whole bunch of cow fields. But every one of us who does eat meat is participating in something that has some questionable ethics behind it. Because even if you're okay with one animal dying for another, which personally I am, and even if you're saying, well, the places I buy meat from aren't necessarily mistreating the animals, which hopefully is true for most of us, but factually isn't.
They seduce that chicken to death. That's the way I'd want to go.
We've talked on this show before about what a huge carbon toll, basically, red meat production is. How much carbon, how much CO2 gets put in the air, not to mention methane. So if you're talking about greenhouse gas emissions, the production of red meat is a huge factor in greenhouse gas emissions. Not only do we have a whole bunch of energy going into creating these cows, because, by the way, you have to grow the grain to feed the cows, so it's one step up in terms of how much energy it takes as opposed to, you know, eating plant foods. You have to grow the grain, then feed the cows, you have to ship this meat around. All of that takes actual energy. But then you have to add the fact that these are ruminants who are putting out a significant amount of methane. They are burping out methane every single day and causing a huge amount of methane, which is 26 times as potent a greenhouse gas as CO2, into the atmosphere and causing problems. So the production of red meat when it comes to greenhouse gases is incredibly detrimental. We've talked about it before. We are aware of that. However, an article came across my desk recently that blew my mind because it was something I had never thought of. And the numbers, quite frankly, were shocking.
It was like a file was thrown on your desk, like a dossier. And it, you know, like...
It was like the Pelican Brief. It was Julia Roberts did it while in disguise.
Denzel Washington. He slapped a dossier just 7 good men died to get you this information, Bobby. Do with it what you will.
Well, I was thinking, you know, it was in Damien's favorite journal, PNAS. And I was thinking when I saw part of the title about, you know, the red meat production environmental impact, I was thinking that it was either going to be the upfront stuff like we talked about, greenhouse gases. We've also talked before about things that are similarly related but aren't necessarily greenhouse things. So, for instance, rainforest devastation, which we see down in the Amazon quite a bit in the name of large beef cow ranches.
PNAS is covering science now. Crazy.
The contamination of local ecosystems, which happens obviously because you have runoff from all of these big cow pooping operations everywhere. We could talk about water usage, which is also a big deal in terms of eating it, our own consumption of it, heart disease and obesity. There's a bunch of things to talk about in terms of red meat and environmental impact. But the article that I saw was something I had never even thought about. It was only looking at the American agricultural industry, so we're not looking at the Amazon, we're not looking at importing beef from other places. And it wanted to look at the effect on air pollution. Not greenhouse gas emissions, air pollution, particularly particulate matter air pollution. So like tiny little things. This is kind of like when we talk about diesel and how diesel pollutes, how instead of the, like gasoline engines tend to be mainly greenhouse gases, diesel has a lot of particulate matter pollution. And that might not necessarily destroy the environment, but it hurts us individually because we breathe that in, it gets into our lungs, and statistically will kill X amount of people every year.
Well, it also owns the libs when you roll coal. So that's like another...
Yeah, that is true. Factually true.
Man, damn it, in my Prius, that man ranting in his truck just owned me.
So what they found is that air pollution from food production in the United States kills about 18,000 Americans a year, 16,000 of which are from the meat, milk, or egg production line of agriculture. So basically, most of it, the vast majority of it, is from these animal byproducts. And the vast majority of that, 80% of that 16,000, is just from cows. Like, you know, cows make up 80% of that 16,000, and then the remaining 20% are chickens, pork, duck, turkey, like everything else put together makes up the remaining 20%. So mainly what we're talking about is a cow problem.
Surely the meat industry wouldn't let their well-paid workers be around such an unsafe environment.
You're right. Well, that's actually, you bring up a good point, which is that this is going to affect mostly people close to the actual sources. This type of particulate matter pollution is really interesting and varied. It includes everything from dust, like literally just dust. The, you know, cows tromping around in dusty fields create literal dust clouds that we breathe in, and that is bad for you. That gets silica in your lungs. It is everything from dust to fertilizers that we have to spread on plants. And you might say, well, how does that affect cows? Remember, we have to grow the plants for cows to eat. So the fertilizer that we use on plants also affects that as well. It is, if you think of the runoff, like the ammonia and stuff, the natural stuff that's going to get into the air because cows are peeing and pooing and everywhere. And some of that stuff is going to get taken up into the air around you. And then it's going to become particulate matter that you breathe in. Now, that's crazy because that puts the number of deaths just from cows alone somewhere like 13,000 or so a year. We're talking somewhere around 50% of car accidents. Damien, could you imagine that particulate matter from cow farming kills about half as many people as car accidents in the United States?
That is shocking. And I think the reason we haven't heard of it is because mostly migrant labor work in meatpacking plants and whatnot. So
that's true, but this particulate matter, like we said, it will be certainly emphasized in the local area, but it will spread out around as well. So this doesn't just affect, you know, farm laborers and people who live right next to the cow farms, though it will affect them disproportionately.
It affects city slickers driving through flyover country.
Yeah, no, it literally, it almost killed Billy Crystal.
He was chasing Curly's gold, Bobby. That's what killed him.
It turns out Curly's gold is actually a euphemism for particulate matter put into the air by cows.
Oh, thank God. I thought Curly was a euphemism for Jack Palance's pubes. At that age, I'm just surprised he has them.
So why is it that this is so bad? Well, part of it is that this is a type of like industrial thing, and we don't think about it this way, but this is a type of industrial production that's essentially done outside. I mean, think of all the other kinds of dangerous type industrial production. If you're in a metal welding and machine shop, you're indoors. So are you putting out a bunch of like metal flakes and stuff into the air? Yeah, but it's into the air of your fucking factory and then it gets sucked up by the air system. Like, this is this one thing that we don't even think about this way, but is essentially a factory that occurs outside, especially in rural areas where that factory is putting out a whole bunch of particulate matter into the air where a bunch of people are just living and doing their normal lives. And so basically we have these outdoor factories that produce a ton of particulate matter that then get absorbed into us. So what can we do about it?
I hear what you're saying, Bobby, and I'm going to jump in here, and I think I know what to do about it. We dome flyover country, or in California, the parts of California that smell like cow ass. We dome it up like it was a Mr. Burns plot.
Anybody who's driven up the I-5 through Central California would probably be very happy with that solution because it is an actual problem, and it would at least make part of that drive not horrible if you didn't have AC with your windows down.
We could capture all of the methane That'd be a huge cost on
takes
on global warming. And secondly, all the people in those communities can start their own government. We don't give a fuck what happens inside the dome. We just care that we get our sweet meat.
Ironically, we could then convince them that they are on a flat earth, and that is the dome that they were talking about.
We could Truman Show every one of them.
Well, obviously, you know, we could all decide to be vegetarians tomorrow, but spoiler alert, I'm not going to do that, so it'd be pretty hard for me to convince other people to do that. But there's other things in between. So one is we could all just cut down on the amount of red meat we have. We don't necessarily need to suddenly stop eating it, but if we even cut out a day, like they suggested, one of the suggestions was if you have like a meatless Mondays tradition where all of a sudden one day of the week becomes a day where in general people don't eat red meat, that would have a substantial impact on the amount of red meat we have to produce and therefore on the amount of cows we have to raise and particulate matter associated with it.
Catholics did the same thing. What do you think Lent is?
I think you're thinking about Good Friday.
Yeah, they're thinking about Good Friday. Hey, everybody, go overfish the seas. Give the cows a break.
Yeah, my favorite part of the whole Good Friday thing where they're like, all right, you can have fish, but you can't have meat, was what they then defined as fish, because then at some point the Catholic Church determined that a beaver was a fish so that you could eat beaver on Fridays.
Batman doesn't, for all my friends. Batman's Catholic.
We could also have different types of farming practices. We just talked about how a lot of this is because cows themselves kind of live their lives outside and whatnot. Theoretically, you could make a rule where cows were not allowed to run around dusty fields. Like, if you want to have cows outdoors, you need to have, you know, decent grassy fields so they're not causing a stampede of dust everywhere they go. You have to have the proper runoff so that the ammonia and the chemicals that are in their poo and their pee doesn't get into the local water system and doesn't therefore get up into the air. Like, there are ways you could do it, but it would all be very expensive and difficult to our like everyday way of life. And the reality of the situation is if we really wanted to change it, the best thing you could do would be to just limit your own personal meat intake, and that would have a broader effect throughout. So it's hard because there's not like an easy, quick fix. Now, one of the things we talked about before is a quick fix. We talked a few months ago, an article that still, in my opinion, did not get nearly enough publicity was the fact that we discovered that just mixing a tiny amount of seaweed in with a cow's normal diet cuts their methane emissions by 80%. That's a huge deal. It's incredibly cheap, easy to do. It should be mandated in every cow farm throughout the world. It won't be, but it's a very easy fix. We don't have the same type of easy fix for this because we're talking about particulate matter. It comes in a lot of different forms. There's a lot of different causes. And unless you're going to move all the cows inside all the time, it seems like some element of this or another will constantly be going on. And really, the only fix is on the consumer end to basically say, all right, since they're not going to do something differently in the meat production industry, we're going to do something in terms of the meat consuming part of it.
We let people starve and freeze out in the cold. You think we're going to build housing and shelter for cows and chickens? It's ridiculous. But here's a solution that is American. You know what we'd love in America? Subsidizing large interests. What if we were to take the massive subsidies we give oil and give that to like those beyond meats, those fake meats?
Yeah.
And say, hey, billion-dollar contract, multi-billion-dollar contract, whoever can make a T-bone steak out of plants, that fools me.
Or what if we got them to grow cows that peed oil? Then they wouldn't have to go and get oil out of, like, the Gulf with dangerous rigs that catch on fire, and then we could also still keep the cows.
You know what? This is actually a pretty good way to get conservatives down with playing God. Like with genetics and science, like we want a cow that when we kill, it creates vegetable beyond meat steaks, but it can piss crude and have huge tits. Can we put that on the cow too?
And this doesn't even mean switching all the way to vegetarianism even for that day or whatever we're talking about. It could just mean switching your meat choice because cows really are a different thing because of the fact they're ruminants, they're putting out way more CO2 gases because of their size and how much water and everything they take. Their food intake is a bigger stress on the system. So not all meats are equally destructive. Plants, we talked about this, are destructive in terms of creating particulate matter pollution, but it's not nearly to the degree cows are. And cows are not the same destructive level as pigs and are not the same destructive level as goats or sheep, or usually the least impactful is chickens. In fact, if you look at chickens, chickens are pretty darn good at turning plant material into protein efficiently. And a lot of the numbers will show like, okay, well, a chicken is the best animal we have to do it. And it takes, you know, like 8 times as much grain to create a calorie of chicken meat as it does grain. And so, you know, even then, even with chickens, it's not so great. But one of the things that those overlook is the fact that chickens don't always have to be fed grain food, meaning we don't have to grow food to feed chickens. Chickens are pretty good at eating like table scraps, things that would otherwise just rot away into methane in a landfill. And so if you have a group of local chickens, like you have chickens in your backyard, and you're just feeding them table scraps, well, you don't have to grow extra food for them. They're more efficiently processing the food that you have, and then you eat their meat, and there'll be some cost to that, but it won't be nearly as high as things like cows, which all have to essentially be purposely taken into account. I need to grow this grain for this cow. I need to have this for this cow, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas with chickens, it's almost like an afterthought. Like, well, I could scrape the remains of dinner into the trash can, or I can throw it in the backyard and these things can eat it and I can have an egg tomorrow.
They also eat insects, don't they?
True.
So, I mean, couldn't we put them to work, you know, pest control businesses? For feeding time, we let the chickens run loose in this cockroach right. motel of a house, and then we go slaughter them for dinner.
If only the Australians had thought of this instead of cane toads to get rid of those beetles back in the day.
Don't they have to deal with, like, millions of mice running around? Like,
yes.
Isn't there, like, some sort of biblical plague of mice attacking Australia?
Yeah. We actually covered that a while back, and it doesn't look fun.
Could the Tasmanian devils that we took off the mainland, can we bring Ooh. Them back and have them... I mean, a Tasmanian devil. All right, Bobby, we've asked the question on this show, how many unarmed men would it take to kill a lion? Well, I guess same question, but with mice. How many mice does it take to kill a Tasmanian devil?
I don't think mice have the loyalty to pull it off. I think, like, the second one mouse starts getting eaten, the other ones just go the other way.
Okay, so you're picturing a Band of Brothers-like situation. In the human v. lion situation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, humans, we can get together and be like, this is for the bigger good. We're going to kill this lion together, even if some of us go down fighting. But now, I think the mice, just every man for himself.
And that is why mice will never rule this world.
On to article number 2, what's going on with the Delta variant?
Unless you give them a cookie.
So, since we haven't been doing our weekly COVID show, let's talk a little bit about the Delta variant, what's going on, where it came from, why it's in the news, and why it will likely affect your life, regardless of where you live, pretty soon. So, where did it come from originally? It was first noted in India, and the difference has to do with part of the binding site on that spike protein that we've talked so much about, and its ability to bind more closely, or bind better. Now, we've talked about a few different variants that have all had, you know, different versions of being able to bind, hence why there was the Alpha variant we saw in the UK. We found, I think the Beta one came from Brazil. Now we're up to the Delta, which was from India. So again, it binds better. And by better, we mean a lot better. It is much, much more transmissible. So much so that I'm going to read you some staggering numbers, but it seems to be somewhere around the range of 70 to 100% more effective at binding than the other variants like Alpha, which keep in mind, we're already like 70% more effective at binding than the original variant. So we are at Gen 3 level of being incredibly effective at binding to human cells.
Gotcha. So we're talking PlayStation 3 versus PlayStation 1.
Right.
Gotcha. That made it real to me.
It also appears to cause more severe cases. That data is a little shaky, but more and more is coming out that it seems to cause more severe hospitalizations, not just more cases overall because it's more transmissible, but more severe cases as well. That might be because it binds better to those cells and therefore establishes itself as a stronger infection in people it wouldn't otherwise in some of the other variants. But more and more news is coming out that really point to this Delta variant as being incredibly concerning. It has quickly essentially taken over most places it has entered. In Israel, it's now the dominant strain, and in the UK. In both those places, it has only taken over since the beginning of June, and it is now responsible for like 90 to 100% of all the cases. In the US, it's starting to take over. It's now responsible for like 40% of all the cases. It's the dominant form in California where we are now. Think about what this means. This means that everything else is running rampant, right? So there's the original one flowing around somewhere, then there's these other alpha variants flowing around, they're going in these different populations, and this delta variant comes in, and then despite the fact that these other ones are already established in countries, they have millions of infected people in any given country, this delta variant is so infectious that it not only continues to infect people, it catches up to and surpasses the thing that has a, like, 1 million times head start. That is crazy and indicative of a very, very transmissible disease.
Now, in America, we have a lot of people who, I am shocked, remember to breathe. They are that fucking dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And it is no secret that America has a special, and amongst political party, political lines, has really shitty vaccination rates. You know, some states it's great, uh-huh. Some places it's really terrible. Yeah. Like the American South is dismal. So basically what happened was these people, all of these people who refused to get the vaccine, they stayed inside or whatever, but they survived through the original. They now think mm-hmm. it's fake, and they're going outside, and bam, they're going to get hit. So the entire South is going to get hit with, I guess, the most real strain of COVID.
Yeah, well, not just the South, like almost everywhere. Like, again, it's replacing in Israel. Israel has one of the best vaccination rates in the world. It's like 85% or more of their adult population has gotten both doses of the Pfizer vaccine. So, like, they're really well covered, and this is fucking them up. Now, the new data coming out of Israel is basically suggesting that they are going through a second pandemic and they're on the upswing. They almost completely eradicated COVID. COVID was dying out in that country because of their incredible vaccination effort. And this Delta variant is hitting back. About half of the new cases, the new infection cases, are among children, which is unsurprising because children still are not eligible for the vaccines. So about half are in children, but about half are in adults, and many of those adults were already vaccinated. That is terrifying. Now, there's some cautions to throw in here. Some of these people were already vaccinated in that they had gotten both of their shots, but they hadn't quite gotten past the week or two mark after that second shot. So they were mostly covered, but not all the way covered. So there is some kind of, hey, well, maybe if you're all the way covered, it's still very, very low. But the numbers are startling. So this comes out of Israel. And they wanted to look at the effectiveness of these vaccines to fight off mild or asymptomatic cases. That dramatically fell in face of the Delta variant. From 94% effective, so the vaccine against the other variants, 94% effective at stopping asymptomatic or mild cases. It means you're almost guaranteed. 1 out of 20 people might still get an asymptomatic or mild case, but almost guaranteed not to. That fell to 64% with the Delta variant. 64%. That is a dramatic drop in effectiveness. Again, we're not sure how much of that is due to people not being quote unquote all the way fully super vaccinated or whatnot, but it seems like even though this is still working, it is still important to go get that vaccine. The effectiveness in the face of Delta has dropped in a terrifying way.
Now, I only know this because I've been a co-host on this show for so long, but, you know, yes, obviously dropping from 90% to 60% is a big drop in efficiency, mm-hmm. but as I learned on this show, you know, when we have flu vaccines that are over 50% effective, we look at them as very strong, very good vaccines.
True, absolutely. But flu, much less transmissible than this, right? And so the problems with a really transmissible disease is that you need a little bit higher effectiveness in your vaccines in order to make them work. Now, thankfully, those numbers are startling, but thankfully, the effectiveness against severe cases where you need to be hospitalized or you're very, very sick, that seems to have dropped too, but only a small amount from 98% to 93%. That is a more important number and one we should absolutely care more about because those are the people who are going to die. But that other group that has now gone on to 64% for milder asymptomatic cases can still spread it. And so we do still want to be concerned about it. It is very scary to hear some of this data. I am very interested to hear more detailed analysis as we get the data in. But it's something we in California, who are now in a place where the dominant strain is the Delta variant, we in almost all the other first world nations that are slowly being taken over by this Delta variant need to consider, which is that the beautiful protection we have been afforded by our vaccines over the past few months may not be the bulletproof vest that we've assumed it to be for this time. Now, we've always known, you know, it's not perfect, 1 out of 20 chance or something. But like in terms of the effectiveness dropping from 94% to 64%, that might be a good reason to actually think about changing how we live once again in the face of this virus, as they are doing in Israel. And they are looking to restart a lockdown in a country that thought they had essentially gotten rid of coronavirus only a few months ago.
On the plus side, I know I mentioned it earlier when this is along political divides. Maybe this is the great political enema that this country needs. It's, you know,
I don't know if the first one didn't do it. Like,
this is a more effective, we basically tried the over-the-counter stuff. Now we're getting the prescription stuff. And the fact that the target population, the population that's saying it's a hoax, they're doing it to themselves. So I don't feel bad.
Yeah, but my problem with that is, it's working against people who have already gotten vaccinated. And so those people are trying to do the right thing, right? It would be better if this particular strain was more lethal, but it was still, you couldn't catch it if you were vaccinated, because then it would be more, the punishment would be geared towards people who weren't doing like their civic job, so to speak, in terms of getting vaccinated, taking themselves out of the chain of transmission. But right now it's going against people who are doing the best they can. They, you know, maybe they socially distanced during the outbreak and they got their vaccine. They did everything they could, but they are still getting screwed because other people, sometimes by choice, in the case of India, almost certainly not by choice, those people just didn't have access to the vaccine, but other people were not vaccinated. At some point, it got into somebody likely immunocompromised, it mutated, and that mutation is now coming back to haunt them.
Yeah, like if the strain had come out of America, we could assume that it was the cause of anti-vaxxers, you know, the right fact that we didn't knock it out. But because it came out of a country like India, it's just, how do you...
People there are clamoring for the vaccine. Like there are people will do almost anything to get the vaccine. COVID was wrecking India really badly, and people desperately want it. It was actually one of the saddest things I've seen is they showed the lines of people waiting to get the vaccine, the COVID vaccine in India. And it was, thousands and thousands of people long for a vaccine supply. They estimated to have maybe 60 or 70 doses or something. Meanwhile, here in the US, it's available for everybody over the age of, I think, 16 now who wants it. And there's a whole bunch of people who refuse to get it. And that, to me, is one of the saddest discrepancies.
I would love it. God, I would love it. Can we do start a nonprofit where we create like a fake organization? We basically just want to send Alex Jones to India so he can try to preach anti-vaccination and just get like caned in a town square.
We don't need to do that to the poor Indians. We already sent them goddamn Mother Teresa to make them suffer for decades instead of getting opiates on their way out the door because it was a weird religious belief. We don't need to send Jones there as well.
No. I think the Indian people are going to handle Mr. Jones. I think they're going to do what we're too cowardly to do in our own country. They're going to cane him in a town square until he ejaculates, "All right, I paid enough for this."
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 568, where you learned all about how the production of red meat might be killing your lungs and what's going on with the Delta variant. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 569.
So wait, this is India? Where's all the bows and arrows?
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.